will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. On the program today, you're going to hear from one of the supervisors in Campbell County, Virginia, that recently voted in favor of declaring the county a Second Amendment sanctuary, Campbell County becoming the second county in Virginia to do so. I can tell you, I don't think that they will be the last. As a matter of fact, yesterday evening, was that Wednesday night? I'm having a really hard time keeping track of the days this week. Wednesday evening, I was out at my county supervisors meeting, and I had talked with my county sheriff beforehand and expressed, you know, my desire to see the county where I live become a Second Amendment sanctuary, and he seemed supportive. So I reached out to my local supervisor as well. He encouraged me to show up and attend the meeting. And I was there. I was anticipating being the only person speaking in favor of a Second Amendment sanctuary for my county, but no. I was the second person to sign up to speak publicly. And the first person who showed up also spoke out in favor of a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution. So I can tell you that one is being discussed where I live outside of Farmville, Virginia. And according to Charlie Watts, a supervisor in Campbell County, Virginia, he is getting a lot of requests for information from other counties around the state. Take a look and a listen. Mr. Watts, thank you so much for your time, sir. It's great talking with you today.
Yes, sir.
And congratulations on Campbell County becoming a Second Amendment sanctuary, the second in the state of Virginia to do so. Carroll County passed their resolution a few months ago, but Campbell County the first in the state to pass a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution since the election. And was that sort of the reason why you decided to bring this resolution forward?
Yes, sir. I've been hearing a lot of stuff, which, you know, has been trying to happen the last year, and I just felt like with the change in both houses that it was time for us to stand as a board and let it be known of where we stand on the Second Amendment.
So what exactly does the resolution say, Supervisor Watts?
Most importantly, that the county will not back any infringements on the rights for the Second Amendment, and that we will not give any public funds, taxpayers' dollars, to support any infringements that may be put upon us.
And the county sheriff supports this as well?
I have not spoken directly to the sheriff, mm-hmm. but the new sheriff that just got elected, he did reach out to me and said that he appreciate what we have been doing, and so I feel like he is in agreement, but I have not spoken with the current sheriff.
Okay. And have you heard from other folks within Campbell County? What's the reaction been since the passage of this resolution?
Yes, sir. Actually, the response has been overwhelming. I really had no idea how much attention it would bring, but we have had, I'm just going to take a guess here, about 10 to 15 other counties that have reached out to me and to the staff at the county asking for a copy of our resolution, and that they want to follow suit, you know, especially all the bordering counties just about, and then some of them that are quite a ways away. And it's been a great response, and I appreciate everybody, you know, trying to follow suit. So.
Well, I can tell you, I was at my county supervisor's meeting last night, and I was prepared to ask for a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution. I was the second public speaker. The first speaker, a woman, got up, and she kind of stole my thunder because she started talking about a Second Amendment sanctuary resolution. Now, I was really, really excited that I was not the only person there to bring this up, and I'd never met this woman before, don't know who she is. But to me, that really speaks to the grassroots power of this movement. How did you learn about these Second Amendment sanctuaries that are popping up around the country?
Well, I, of course, you know, just hearing it on Fox News, how other states have done, has done some of the sort of same thing. And then I guess it was Thursday after the election, I was talking to another board member, John Hardy, and I brought it up. I said, it sure would be nice to do something like this. And then we both started to research and found, you know, other counties, and then we actually saw where Carroll County had did it prior to us. And so then I went from there, and I got one of my local attorneys, Whit Johnston. He actually helped me with some of the wording, and I actually prepared it and then presented it last Thursday to our board. So that's how it kind of came.
I love it. And again, you know, people around the state of Virginia hear what you all are doing. They're picking up the torch. And you know, you talk about how you worked with a local attorney to kind of craft the language on this. In your opinion, is this resolution or is this Second Amendment sanctuary status, is this mostly symbolic, or do you believe that there's some teeth to this? I mean, if the governor signs gun control bills, you know, in early January or February of next year that do infringe on the right of people to keep and bear arms, that tell them you can't, you know, own the most commonly sold rifle in America today. You can't own the most commonly owned magazines in the country today, or things that that do infringe on the right to keep and bear arms. Do you think that this resolution allows for the sheriff to use his discretion in terms of what laws that he's going to, you know, prioritize and enforce in Campbell County?
Well, so it's a real sticky situation. You know, Virginia is a Dillon rule state. So, you know, whatever comes down from the state level, we're expected to follow. But I feel personally that if enough counties stand together, and I feel like that even though it is a Dillon rule state, that we shouldn't, as a county, shouldn't be asked to go against our rights, or go against our, you know, people in our county go against their rights. And I feel like if enough people follow suit, that it will make it an impression, you know, whether that will change things or change the governor's mind, I have no idea. But, you know, it's a real sticky situation. You know, you get into some different laws there. So I really don't want to speak too much about that.
No, I get it. And it's a hypothetical at this point, but I imagine it's something that that we are going to be wrestling with. And I hope that the governor is listening. You know, this is one of the things that that does concern me here. Obviously, the governor you know, these new anti-gun lawmakers feel empowered by the election results to come in and approve all of these gun control laws. But at the same time, you know, you look at the number of counties and the sheer land area of Virginia that did not vote to go along with these gun control measures. And I think it really does speak to this deep divide between the more rural parts of the state, the more urban parts of the state. I lived in the D.C. suburbs for 8 years. I got to tell you, Mr. Watts, I couldn't take it. That's why my wife and family moved down to Farmville, because we liked it better down here. And now all of a sudden, you know, we're being told by folks in the D.C. suburbs in Richmond and Virginia Beach to give up your rights in exchange for the empty promise of public safety.
Right. And for example, I had someone reach out to me yesterday, and of course I hadn't seen it and not sure if it's true or not, but they were talking about setting age limits for kids, you know, going out hunting. You know, you had to be a certain age. Well, my son is 7 years old, and he shot at his first buck last Saturday. And of course he didn't kill him. He missed him, but it's that experience. And gun control starts with the family, and it starts at home. And most of your rural folks out here know, you know, they are very, you know, they know about guns and they've been around guns. And you have these cities, you know, that doesn't have that experience. And, you know, they are speaking, in my opinion, for most of the state, which is wrong. And, you know, there's a whole lot more to it than just gun. I mean, it is hunting, it is sporting, it is self-defense. And I just feel so strongly that you know, we all need to stand together and fight this. It's just a shame of what I think is going to come down the pipeline come January.
So. I think you're right. And I think it is very important that we stand together and fight. And I that's why I'm so encouraged by what you're doing and the outreach that you've seen from other counties. And I got to tell you, I mean, I really do believe that this is really just the start of a movement. And not only, you know, do I expect we're going to see more counties independently pass these resolutions. But I think the real power comes when supervisors like yourself in Campbell County start talking with the supervisors in Carroll County and Appomattox and some of these other counties that are, I believe, going to pass these Second Amendment Sanctuary resolutions. When we're able to start to build that network of grassroots supports and elected officials and gun owners from around the state, I think that we can be a force to be reckoned with at the state house. And I'm encouraged by what you're doing, and I would love to see other counties follow suit.
Yes, sir. And I do appreciate you getting with me, and please let other people know. I'll be happy to help them start their resolution. They can call us and get a copy of it to start theirs, and just let's all join together.
So. Yes, sir. Supervisor Charlie Watts in Campbell County, Virginia. Thank you so much for your time today, sir. I look forward to talking to you again very soon. I am looking forward to talking with Supervisor Watts again here very soon, as well as perhaps other county supervisors in the state of Virginia that are moving towards a Second Amendment Sanctuary resolution. I suspect right now we've got two in Virginia, Carroll County and Campbell County. I suspect that by the time the Virginia legislature kicks off its 2020 session, this is just my prediction, that we will have more than two dozen Second Amendment sanctuary counties in the state of Virginia. I could be wrong about that. I've got no inside information about any of this. But just based on the response that Charlie Watts has gotten there in Campbell County, based on what I'm hearing from gun owners around Virginia, I would not be surprised to see two dozen or more counties having adopted that resolution before Governor Ralph Northam and anti-gun lawmakers get the opportunity to even vote on any gun control bills next year. All right, let's get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivism report. This one's going to make your blood boil. I'm just telling you right now. Do you remember this story out of Philadelphia? It's probably a few weeks ago now. In the span of like 2 days, there was a 2-year-old who was shot and an 11-month-old who was shot in crimes. Well, we now know a little bit more about that 11-month-old and the 11-month-old father who apparently used his child as a human shield during a drug deal. Yeah, Nafis Monroe is 25 years old. He has been arrested and charged now in relation to this crime. Prosecutors say back on October 19th, Monroe took his 11-month-old son to a drug deal in the hopes that the child's presence would discourage any violence. Now, why would there be violence at a drug deal? Well, police say that Monroe was trying to buy drugs using counterfeit money, and this was not the first time that he had done so. Monroe wanted on a probation warrant. And according to the chief of the Philadelphia DA's homicide unit, Anthony Voci Jr., he was trying to use funny money to buy real drugs. He said, quote, he was using counterfeit money to purchase drugs, knowing that counterfeit money is something that's very upsetting to drug dealers. And when they find out that they're being burned with counterfeit money, they act violently. This was not the first case of Mr. Monroe using counterfeit money. He said, it's our belief and our investigation has led us to believe that he intentionally had his child with him when he was making such types of purchases with the idea or belief that if somebody saw that he had a child in the car, that they would not fire upon him. A human shield, Voci said, is probably the term that I would use. Monroe's now been charged with recklessly endangering another person, endangering the welfare of a child. That 11-month-old is still clinging to life. Police say if he does survive, he will not make a full recovery, is likely to be a quadriplegic as a result of the drug dealer's actions and his father's actions. The alleged shooter, 29-year-old Francisco Ortiz, has also been arrested, charged with attempted murder and other related offenses. In fact, they believe that he was somewhat connected to that shooting of the 2-year-old in Philadelphia as well. And again, here we have another case of drug and gang violence in Philadelphia. And the attitude of a lot of politicians is, well, you know what? We need to make it harder for legal law-abiding gun owners to exercise the right to keep and bear arms. Forget that. Forget that. This guy was well-known to police, well-known to authorities, as was Ortiz. And, you know, yesterday we saw the Attorney General William Barr announce a new initiative nationwide that is designed to help local prosecutors and U.S. attorneys work together to refer cases involving these very violent offenders to federal court, so that the nexus of violent crime in any given community is actually adequately addressed at the federal level. So they don't get slaps on the wrist. They don't get off with time served. They're using the resources of the federal government to prosecute these individuals to the fullest extent of the law. And they go to a federal prison for a long time. There is no early release in a federal prison. That's how you deal with these violent offenders. And unfortunately, in Philadelphia, they seem to be going the other way. All right, on to our armed citizen story of the day from Kansas City, Kansas, where a homeowner woke up to the sound of an intruder. Thankfully, that homeowner was armed and able to protect themselves. This was Wednesday night. Victim told police he was startled by a noise in his home. He got up to look, found the suspect, ended up shooting the suspect. Suspect taken to a local hospital. Last report is listed as stable. We don't know the extent of the injuries there. Police have classified the incident as aggravated burglary and aggravated battery. And right now, again, appears to be a pretty clear-cut case of self-defense. We don't have a lot of details on this case, but we'll try to bring more details to you when they emerge. Our good deed of the day. From Norman, Oklahoma, not too far from my old stomping grounds in Oklahoma City, where a police officer was in the right place at the right time and willing and able to help save the life of a child there in Norman, Oklahoma. Officer Kyle Hicks has been a police officer for more than a decade. He got a call about a child who was not breathing. He said, I got my car in gear. I got there as quick as I could. Began giving the infant CPR and was able to get the baby to start breathing. Baby got transported to the hospital. Officer Hicks went back, you know, on his shift. I mean, he went back to work. The next day, he found out that that little girl was going to be okay. And he actually got a chance to see that little girl after that life-saving incident. You can see the picture there with some of these fellow officers with the Norman Police Department. And again, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, Officer Kyle Hicks in Norman, Oklahoma, we thank you for your very good deed. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Thank you for being a part of the program. Tomorrow, our friend Stephen Gutowski joins us from the Washington Free Beacon. We're going to talk about the increase in NICS checks in October. Plus, we'll talk about the era of defiance that seems to be emerging around the country when it comes to these gun control laws. And Stephen has an auction. He's taking part in a celebrity auction. And you have the chance to get taught some basic pistol instruction by Stephen Gutowski himself. We'll give you more details about that on tomorrow's Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Don't forget, you can follow us and subscribe at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. You can also become a VIP member of Bearing Arms, and you can get exclusive content, editors' chats, and more. Be sure to check that out at BearingArms.com. Thanks again for tuning in today. We'll see you tomorrow.